I'm Chris Eddy. Welcome to a new edition of Roundup Unfiltered, available exclusively for a limited time to Roundup subscribers. Today, we catch up with the Chief Executive of Victoria's main peak body for councils, the Municipal Association of Victoria, formed in 1879 under state legislation. In a move that surprised many, Kelly Grigsby took up the role last year from Kerry Thompson, after more than 2 years as CEO of the City of Hobart and 6 years previously as CEO of the City of Wyndham. Kelly takes time out today to tell us what appealed to her about the MAV role and her plans to take the organisation through this election year and beyond. Kelly Grigsby, great to have you on the Roundup and nice to have you back in Victoria, can I say?
Oh, it's terrific to be here, Chris, and thanks for the opportunity. And yes, it's wonderful to be back in Victoria.
Tell me, when the announcement was made last year, the CEO of Hobart City Council is coming back to Victoria as the CEO of the MAV. I imagine the most asked question at the time was, why?
It's an interesting question, and certainly there were a few people that were keen to understand my motivation for coming back to Victoria. I absolutely loved living in Hobart and had a wonderful time really reshaping the city of Hobart and positioning it for, you know, the global city that it really needs to become over time, and spent, you know, some really terrific years down in Hobart. It went quite quickly, actually. I was there for about 2.5 years. I really wasn't looking to come back to Victoria necessarily when I did, but I really thought that the MAV was such a unique opportunity. As you know, the role as CEO of the MAV doesn't come up very often. And, you know, I was sort of starting to think about what I would do next. And, you know, I was really keen to continue working in local government. I've been incredibly fortunate to have had a wonderful career in local government, both in sort of rural regional settings and also more recently, obviously, in a capital city as well as metro councils in Melbourne. So I felt that I could make a big difference to the sector at scale at the MAV. So that was really what was appealing to me in taking on the role. And, you know, obviously understanding that we're facing really unprecedented times. And I think, you know, that gets bandied around a lot, that saying, but I really do think that, you know, no one understands the challenges and opportunities facing Victoria in the 21st century better than local councils. And I saw the MAV as really having an important role to play in being future focused and working alongside the sector to really lead its transformation over the next, you know, number of years.
So we'll talk a bit about that in a moment, perhaps, where you see that going. But before we do, as you've said, CEO of Hobart, a capital city for a bit over a couple of years. Before that, CEO of one of the fastest growing council areas in the country. Do you need to have that level of experience within a council to be able to understand then from where you're sitting now what councils are needing from a peak body?
Look, I think so. I mean, I think from my perspective, it's that experience, you know, enables me to have a different perspective, I think, on the role that local government plays, you know, in a global and national and in a state context. So I think that's, you know, my sort of framing for, you know, how I've worked with the board around the future directions of the MAV has really been leaning into that experience, you know, across the multitude of different local government settings to help inform not only, you know, future responses, but also understand the challenges that have existed previously, things that have worked well, things that have not worked as well, really to understand how we can make a real difference.
So you talk about an understanding of the challenges, where the sector's going, but I guess a big part of your early time in the role is hearing from the sector about where people out there in local government land see it going as well. Is that what you've been doing?
I have. I've spent a lot of time visiting councils right across the state, spending time with CEOs, with mayors, with councillors, really understanding some of the challenges locally, but also that we can work together on from a state and national perspective. And that's been really informative. The other work that we've done also to help inform the future direction of the MAV is to really understand where community is at. So we also did quite a lot of community sentiment surveying late last year to really inform our future thinking. And that's been incredibly important to understand at the local level what's important to people as it relates to their councils and also the role of other levels of government. So we've got some really good information that's helped underpin our future directions, and we'll rely, you know, on sort of that currency of that information to inform our upcoming intergovernmental relations framework and advocacy strategy as well.
You mentioned it's a role that doesn't come up very often. I think we can probably count on one hand the number of people who've led the MAV at the CEO level. What are people in the sector saying to you about this opportunity for change? Because, you know, as I think back on my time in the sector, there's always been perhaps a sense that the MAV is, you know, trying to be all things to all people at times, with a lot of things on its plate. Is that a message that you're still hearing and are you conscious of?
Look, I think the reality of the local government sector in Victoria is that it's incredibly diverse, and that's what makes it so wonderful, I think, as a sector to work in. But the challenge that that presents the MAV is that we need to be really linked in to the other organisations that represent particular interests, like Rural Councils Victoria, like the regional cities, like M9. So I'm really conscious that the MAV provides an opportunity to really umbrella the aspirations of those organisations that also have a role to play in representing the sector, to really amplify our voice and ensure that we are able to influence policy and also influence outcomes at the local level, but also do thought leadership that's actually nuanced around key challenges that might be challenges that are experienced in a metro context versus via rural. We've put a lot of thought into the priority directions of our strategic plan over the next 4 years, and they are things that do relate to all councils across Victoria, but there will be occasions where we'll take positions to state council or we'll run a particular framing around a policy approach that would be, you know, necessarily sort of nuanced to suit particular circumstances. I think we have to be much more courageous in our influencing work, and I think that is about building a very sound, strong evidence base that really helps develop contemporary policy to lead local government, and that includes reimagining the future of local government, you know, through to thinking about how we deal with, you know, current issues like the sort of social cohesion falling away that we've seen over recent times in Victoria, but also nationally. So, you know, these are the sorts of issues that I think we need to be taking a leading role on. And I think the MAV, working with partner organisations in civil society, with universities and other sector partners, will really make a difference in helping inform policy development at the front end rather than being responsive at the end when a policy is already kind of at a seriously entertained stage with government. So I think, you know, investing in research, understanding community sentiment, working closely with the sector to really inform how we become a much more constructive partner with all levels of government will be an incredibly important part of our future at the MAV.
Do you think the sector will see a different MAV going forward under your leadership, and what would that look like?
Look, I think the sector's already seeing a step change in the way that the MAV is working, and that's not necessarily as a result of my leadership. I think that's about where the sector's at a point in time, and also I think realising that there are some opportunities for change and also an opportunity to really partner with government around key issues affecting communities. You know, we're talking about housing, we're talking about cost of living, as I mentioned already, social cohesion. There's also the question of financial sustainability, and we know that all levels of government are facing challenges post-COVID with financial sustainability, and that's certainly something that we're working on strategically at the moment with our partners in ELGA, looking at sort of federal advocacy advocacy around financial sustainability as we lead into the next election and, of course, the upcoming parliamentary inquiry. So I think that, you know, the nature of the sector, the nature of the state does require us to sort of work and think differently. And I think you'll see that start to manifest in terms of the way the MAV works with the sector and with government over the next few years.
Where do you see the MAV this year, particularly in an election year?
So we've prioritised a lot of our work between now and October on really being out and about in communities across the state. We're running our Stand for Council program, which is really extensive. There's quite a lot of information on our website about that. I'll be attending as many of those sessions myself as I can. So that's really a focus for us leading into the election. Also, we'll be running a sort of a education campaign around the role and function of local government and really aiming to instill optimism into the sector and celebrate the breadth of work that local government does across the state. And I think this is important framing leading into an election, because otherwise I think we focus too much on some of the things that perhaps aren't working as well as they could if it, you know, relates to behaviour of elected members or whatever it might be. I think there is such great work happening across the sector that we need to be shining a light on. So we'll be playing a really key role in making sure that we're amplifying the great work that's happening in councils right across Victoria.
As we record this, we're waiting to see some detail from the government's plans for conduct changes to the legislation. And some of that, I think, is around that training piece for candidates, for councillors. How do you make sure, given that's not out in the public domain yet, that what you're doing is complementary to what the state government perhaps has in mind?
Look, I think it will be well aligned. I mean, I think we all know what's required of high-performing councils, you know, and there's a number of councils that work incredibly well that are exemplars in this way. And, you know, I think our training and any sort of development that we do into the new term of council focusing on, you know, development of councillors will be very much aimed at ensuring that councillors have the right support, the right leadership skills, the right mentoring opportunities, and also understanding the contemporary landscape of local government, but also some of the inherent challenges that, you know, local councils are facing across Victoria and nationally as well.
So, Kelly, where do you see the MAV sitting between councils, between the state government, given that that relationship with the state level is so important for, you know, constructive working relationships around the state?
Look, we've got a really critical role to play there, and this is, you know, the work that we've been doing really since last year was to really understand how we could better partner with government around, you know, key election commitments, but also things that are going to make a difference in communities. And so we did quite a bit of work to inform a plan for Victoria. We commissioned some work to really inform how a plan for Victoria could be framed to ensure that local government was at the centre of that work, and indeed communities, to really determine the future of communities in a greater Melbourne context and also in a regional and rural context. So I think the relationship with the state is critical, and I think local government are such important partners in delivering on economic and social outcomes in the state. And so it's really incumbent upon us at the MAV to ensure that we have those constructive relationships and that we continue to build on those, but also be clear to be involved at the front end of policy making. And I think that's the key change that we can make together with government, with both levels of government actually, is to be at the table early and influencing the kind of co-creation of policy as it affects communities in the state.
As you say that, are you thinking about recent examples related to housing and planning changes that have got a lot of attention and perhaps some misinformation in the press about the role of councils in that whole space, and perhaps responsibility being unfairly put at the feet of councils for delivering housing?
Look, I think everyone acknowledges now that it's a really complex issue, housing, and it's not one that's just sprung up as an issue overnight. It's been, you know, the result of many years of work or lack thereof in terms of dealing with some of these underlying issues. But I think what we need to remember, Chris, is that it's actually something that's confronting a lot of OECD countries. So Melbourne and Victoria aren't on our own in terms of a housing crisis. It is actually something that's being experienced in other parts of the world. And I think there's learnings that we can certainly take from, you know, countries that have been exemplars in this space, particularly around affordable and social housing investment. And I think moving forward, there's no doubt that governments see local government as a key partner and a key enabler in the effective delivery of housing going forward. I think we just need to ensure that that's done in a way that's joined up and that it's informed by a greater, you know, sort of emphasis on a plan for Melbourne that needs to be its own plan, focusing on the future growth of Melbourne and its future development and its future prosperity and obviously livability. And similarly, we need to be focusing on regional and rural Victoria, and that does need its own sort of planning framework to really guide future investment in all manner of things, but obviously housing as well.
You mentioned the future directions plan that you've been working on. Can you tell us a bit more about what that will look like and when people will get to see more of the detail?
So the strategic plan was endorsed by the board earlier this year, and it's available on our website. We've talked essentially about our role as partnering with the sector to really build sustainable and thriving communities. And this plan really outlines quite a significant shift in the way that the MAV will work as key partners with the sector, really leading work around key focus areas underpinned by the Sustainable Development Goals. So we've got 10 priority areas that we'll be focusing on. The first is active local democracy. So we'll be running some very specific work in relation to how we build local democracy. And that's, you know, certainly something that we'll be rolling out as we lead up to the election in October, but also post-election, and how we work with councils and councillors who are elected in the new term of council to really ensure that, you know, local government is effective and facilitating public participation to really improve service delivery and strengthening community outcomes overall. We've got a focus on health and wellbeing. Obviously, the state of Victoria has a new health plan, and the local government sector has an important role in partnering with government around implementation of that. So again, you know, providing important policy advice early around health and wellbeing. So there's a whole range of areas from connected places through to placemaking, through to diversity, equity and inclusion, which we've spoken about before in terms of social cohesion. We'll also be playing a key role in climate and regenerative design as well. I think given that the federal government's released their net zero plan, it's really important for us to ensure that the local government sector is joined up in its approach to climate and how we look at, you know, our net zero approach, and that we're getting the right level of funding for some of those initiatives as well. So that's going to be critically important also. And penultimately, looking at intergenerational infrastructure. And again, that's inherently linked to sustainability from a financial perspective, and just how we ensure that we've got the right funding to be able to deliver on those commitments of intergenerational infrastructure. So we'll be doing a lot of work with the sector in that space as well over the next 4 years.
Clearly a big piece of work that you've been spending recent months doing. What are you doing, and what do you need to do internally to be able to gear up to deliver that on behalf of the sector?
So we've gone through quite an extensive organisation review that was undertaken last year, and that was really informed by some of the early consultation that I did in my visits and meetings with councils to really understand the future needs of the sector. And that's led to a new organisation design and a new executive team coming on board with a different set of skills, a different set of focus areas to really ensure that we can lead from the front and build capacity across the local government sector in areas like strategic foresight, in sector development as it relates to sort of building capacity and capability, both in partnership with LG Pro as it relates to, you know, officer development, but also councillor development, and ensuring that we've got the right conditions in place for councillors to thrive in their new term of council.
So lots of change, Kelly, lots of work being done. What are you doing yourself to manage the, I guess, the workload and keep some balance in your life?
Look, at the moment I'm onboarding members of the team, so I'm looking forward to handing over a few of these key sort of areas of focus to their new portfolios over the coming weeks. And I very much get energy from spending time with the sector and out with council, sort of understanding, you know, what those local issues are, but also being involved, you know, in projects like we are at the moment with the Centre for Cities around disinformation and how we help to combat that, you know, leading into council elections. So there's lots of great things happening, and I'm really excited by the prospect of what we can achieve together, and very excited about being able to be a constructive partner with government as well, and having the capacity to be able to make a real difference for the sector, but also, you know, to deliver the aspirations of communities across the state.
Is this this role the pinnacle of your local government career, do you think, or would you see yourself going back to a council at any time in the future?
Look, I think time will tell. I think I'm loving this for now, and, you know, there's lots of work to do. So I'm really excited about the opportunity that presents. And, you know, I think looking back, you know, over the course of my career, there's things I've loved about every single role that I've had in local government, and this is no different. It is a different environment to be working in, and I think the opportunity to really partner with councils across the state is an exciting one, to sort of see things at that sort of at that level, and also being able to kind of connect up in a national context through ELGA as well, and, you know, making a real difference to the way the sector's perceived is really what I'm aiming to achieve in my time in this role. I'm still absolutely passionate about city shaping and, you know, working in city government. So yes, absolutely, I'll be forever a local government tragic, I think.
Excellent. You mentioned the national context there, and I did want to ask you, now you've worked in, well, more than two states, but recently Tasmania and Victoria. Where do you think we sit in Victoria as a sector in comparison to other parts of the country? Are things we lead on, and are there things we can learn from other parts of the country on?
Chris, I've always thought that the Victorian local government sector was probably the most contemporary, most progressive sector in the country, and my view on that hasn't really changed. I think that, you know, things like our history in maternal and child health, particularly scaling up services as we did to meet, you know, very diverse needs during those early days of COVID, you know, they're things I think that Victorian local governments do particularly well, and of course other state jurisdictions play a similar role. I think the breadth of services that local government offer in Victoria is somewhat unique. Even, you know, with areas in Queensland that have much bigger councils, for instance, they don't necessarily deliver the suite of life stage services that local government do in Victoria. So I think, you know, one of the things that we can be particularly proud of in Victoria, I think, is our breadth of service delivery, and also the way that we do scale up service to meet local circumstances. And I think that's something that, you know, we should really hang on to and continue to sort of evolve over time.
Nicely said. Kelly, thank you. It's always great to chat, and it's lovely, as I said at the outset, to have you back in Victoria and to be able to catch up with you like this.
Thanks, Chris. It's great to be here.
My guest today on Roundup Unfiltered has been Kelly Grigsby, the CEO of the Municipal Association of Victoria. This episode has been available for a limited time for subscribers to the Roundup. You can find out more about subscribing and our regular news-focused episodes at www.lgroundup.com. Until next time, thanks for listening, and bye for now.